This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I have a special guest this time, and I know him for almost 20 years. He just reminded me that first time we met was 2006.
Mark, August. Welcome. July, almost 20 years.
19. Almost 20 years. Okay, so Mark, welcome to SaaS Scaled, and I would like for you to tell us about your fascinating story, how you did it, what you're up to, and what you did in the past.
All right, that's great. It's not that fascinating. I mean, it might be to some people. I doubt it. So just by way of introduction, my name is Mark Gagne. In April of 2002, my business partner, his name is Chris Corcoran. Chris Corcoran and I co-founded a company called Memory Blue. Previous to that, just real quickly, Chris came up in the internet connectivity sales world and migrated to work for F5. Amazing company. We're both sales professionals. I started my career off at Computer Associates, CA, I guess it's Broadcom now. I think they're going to probably die. Broadcom's going to kill them, but that's okay. We'll move on. And then I went to MicroStrategy, which is a local business intelligence software company, which I know you're quite familiar with, and which is now, I guess you could say, it's a Bitcoin hedge fund. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. So we're both professional sales people, and we, you know, April 2002 was an interesting time, right? Dot-com bubble was bursting. Yeah. All sorts of crazy things were happening. And we both had this entrepreneurial flair or desire. We wanted to start a business. But there were very few things that two knucklehead salespeople could do when they're early in their career. Like, we had just kind of graduated what every sales professional wants to do. Be a field carrying, you know, a bag carrying salesperson. And Chris was a little farther ahead of me, actually, doing that for F5. So I was at MicroStrategy. MicroStrategy had this amazing, well-resourced team, and they had hired a company out of New Hampshire to qualify the inbound leads. And I couldn't believe it, because at CA, they don't have the same resources at MicroStrategy. And I said, what do you mean? You have all these great people working at this company, and you have to hire a company to qualify the inbound leads? Like, why and how? Let me plug in my laptop real quick. Sorry. All right. So we started researching these companies, and he and I decided to start Memory Blue. We started it out of the basement of a house I was living in with some of my friends in Arlington, Virginia. And people thought we were like morons, because they said, well, you guys have just, I mean, Chris was living in Charlotte, established in F5, and I kind of convinced him to move back to Northern Virginia to do this. He was looking to start a business too. I just found the idea a little bit earlier. So he moved back, and people thought we were both knuckleheads, Armand, because they were like, well, you guys had just made it into like, You kind of graduated out of that junior sales role. Why are you guys doing this? You're going to get on the phones? Are you guys like two guys in a spreadsheet? Like, what's this all about? And we said, no, we kind of want to build a company. And we wanted to kind of build something that we wish existed when we got out of sales. Oh, excuse me, when we got out of school. So, which was an opportunity to learn how to go outbound. How to call people much older than you, who know more about technology than you ever hope to learn, and you can have a credible conversation with them. You don't need to sell them anything, but you can have a conversation with them where you can be credible, and you can learn the art of discovery, being quiet, asking open-ended questions, moving conversations along, closing for next steps, not answering the question. You know, all American kids, or most kids, are trained to always answer, oh, I know the answer. But the reality is, you don't need to provide the answer. You want to know the reason why they're asking that question. That's more important. So how do you, the whole goal was to get people in I was a military, we were both military brats. My father was in the Army. His father was in the Marines. And we had a, like a boot, we have still a, like kind of a boot camp culture where we're going to bring you into an office. You're going to work next to your manager. I hate work from home. For early stage employees, hate it. I always hated it, even before COVID, because you're not going to learn anything. So over 20 years, we built the company from two people to over 700, from zero in revenue to over 70 million on an annual run rate when we brought in our private equity partner in the summer of 2022.
Wow.
So we opened up five offices in the U.S. Every office was opened by somebody who started as a sales development representative, an SDR, who wanted to stay with the company. But we also had a unique model where if our clients want still have it, if our clients want to hire Memory Blue employees, people assigned to their campaign, they can pay us a conversion fee. If they like them, they can hire them. And you know, everybody wins that way. So that's a lot. So in modern day, if we fast forward from 2002 to 2022, we went on to acquire a fast-growing international company called Operatix. And they merged the companies into one, which gave us a global reach. Now the CEO of that company is now the president of Memory Blue. Chris and I serve on the board. We're still significant shareholders. And we work up with the company on some key initiatives. And I've moved on to do something else, which we can talk about. But if we want to talk about Memory Blue, certainly let's talk about that too.
This is a fascinating story, Mark. I mean, it is fascinating to me because since I know Memory Blue and I know you for 20 years and looking back then and coming to your offices and then how fast you guys and more important than how fast, honestly, I would say more importantly is consistently you guys grow. You stayed there, you did it, you didn't quit. I'm pretty sure like any other entrepreneur, you had good days, you had bad days, you had tough days, but you didn't quit. You just continued. Maybe that was the background that you guys had. Maybe that's what you inherited from your parents, that you could see that you have to stay on course and just continue doing what you do. And then you got to the place that is very kind of, fascinating to me. It's very, that kind of success that you created. So congratulations. To me, it's fascinating because you created something from nothing and you created something amazing from nothing. So that's great.
Yeah, I will tell you, I mean, it's, the outbound model, it's very tough tactical work. It's not very sexy. It requires a tremendous amount of discipline and putting your psyche is hard. And we work with our prized possession of our employees because we were professional services companies supporting technology firms. And our all-stars were people early in their career, right out of school for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
This might be the hardest thing they've ever done in their lives when they come to work at Memory Blue, but they have so much potential. They have so much upside and like the personal fulfillment you get from like seeing someone work for you who a software company would not even consider interviewing them. Mm-hmm. And then they work for 6 months or a year and a half. And you have software companies pounding down your door to try and hire these folks, which is, that is great. So in a way I like, Memory Blue is like a place to help software companies get qualified meetings and, build their pipeline. But it's also a place for people who, there's something wrong with the higher ed system in the U.S. It costs too much money. It takes too long. And you have people graduating with lots of debt, and some of that's their fault because they're choosing to go to the wrong schools, but the value isn't there. So we would take them and kind of repurpose them and make them valuable to the marketplace. And that's what we always wanted to do. And then when we realized that's what we wanted to do, then everybody starts winning. And next thing you know, you've got this company with, 600-700 employees. So I appreciate the kind words. And it's companies like you that work with us, right? Like, it's very difficult getting a software business. Software scares me. Like being a software entrepreneur, the services is a little more predictable, but I really admire the software entrepreneurs because they're the ones who are really taking the big risks and, they're trusting us to build their pipeline. So
yeah. And you've worked with many of these software companies, with many of these SaaS companies, software companies, and you fill the gap for them in a way, but I'm going to ask you, kind of golden question that any SaaS founder wants to know. they are looking at their software company, their SaaS company. They still need to really generate demand for, you know, bring people to look at their software and everything. And it's still one of the, you know, valid options is to really go and just find people who can really, you know, pick up the phone, send email, and hear 200 no's before any maybe or yes. And that kind of tough job be done by either, you know, firms like what you created or other people. But my question to you, that might be everybody's question as a SaaS founder, is if you wanted to do it today, let's say you wanted to start tomorrow morning and you had that, you know, time machine and you were back to the same kind of, you know, time and age and everything, and now you wanted to press the button and say, I'm now starting again as from the ground and just starting that company. How would you do it differently today, starting such a kind of, you know, company that does the SDR and bring, you know, do all of this cold calling, asking people to come in and just, you know, schedule a meeting, all of those hard work that you guys are doing? How would you do it today at the age of AI, at the age that we are today with social media, with all of this internet marketing? People don't have office phone anymore. So how would you do it now?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I get accused of being a dinosaur. So, you know, just to dig into it, I think we were 27, 28 when we started the company. I just turned 50. So I've seen quite a bit now. And my clients ask me, I was at Black Hat last week and meeting with prospects and clients and past clients and people who used to work at Memory Blue. And the clients and the current clients and the prospects, the prospects were asking me about AI. Mm-hmm. And everybody talks about it. And we've had clients that they've hired Memory Blue, who have sales and marketing, go-to-market technology for AI. And they've hired us to do our thing using our current stack and our methodology. I'm going to kind of rain on the parade yesterday. Like, so there's a lot of money being spent in the space, right? Mm-hmm. There's a company called Clay. I think they raised close to $250 million in the past year. They announced a $100 million round last week. And some of the feedback, like, they're finally starting to get some negative feedback publicly, at least. I think the AI SDR is not a thing yet. Mm-hmm. There are companies out there that are funded. I think Andreessen funded one that, if you dig into it, it's not ready for it. It's kind of like when I was first in sales at CA in 1998, there was this gentleman who would sell these tapes and books called Cold Calling is Dead. And like, you got to do this and do that, and it's going to change significantly. And it stayed the same for, I don't know, 25 years. The list building AI is crushing. So I would certainly buy a tool that has amazing ability to list build. AI is doing an amazing job of that. All these little things you can automate on the go-to-market, on the SDR side, certainly the email writing, I think we all know that now, right? The cadence development and the workflows, all those things can be done better and more quickly, but I'm still not sure, like, if you get a strong, if you just get the right person in the role, I think that person would do just as good as an average person with the tools. So everybody says, well, you can't find amazing people all the time. I said, you can train them and you can do a better job of searching for them, and you can probably pay them a little bit more money. So there are definitely AI tools that I would use, particularly in the very front end of the cycle, to automate the process and give the SDR better ammunition. However, there are no shortcuts. Like these, I don't think there are. And I'm talking to clients, and it sounds self-serving when I say that. Go ahead and try it. Like, try the AI SDR if you want. Try these tools. But a lot of it looks like, to me, particularly on the email side, that companies are like, okay, I'm going to use this tool. It's going to enrich all my data, build me a great workflow, and I'm going to email 10,000 people three times over the next 3 months. What are you going to do after that? You know, like,
so in a way, if I understand you correctly, you say, if I wanted to start the company, I would do it in the old fashioned again today, if I wanted to start now.
Certain piece of it. Yes. I mean, you alluded to it though, right? It's impossible to get people on the phone. There are no desk phones, right? I mean, I'm not a moron. I'm not going to say that that's not possible, but I will say it's like going to the gym. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a gym membership. And if you go to the lowest, the gym that's $10 a month or the gym that's $300 a month, what really matters is what do you do when you go into that gym? Do you have the high-end treadmills and the, you know, or do you just have a stack of dumbbells? And you referred to it earlier. It's the consistency and the discipline which you put into it. Mm-hmm. I still think it's a people problem. It's a leadership problem. It's a training problem, and it's a compensation problem. I think you address those three mm-hmm. before you worry about how AI is going to change my pipeline. I mean, I think mm-hmm. some distraction, honestly. Not all of it. I mean, I know you said you called me old-fashioned, and I called myself a dinosaur. I'm not an idiot. I would definitely – we have a very sophisticated stack at Memory Blue. We spend a lot of money on it.
Yeah. No, I get it. So from your perspective is, hey, be very selective, be mindful and thoughtful about the changes you make, but also make sure that it's still the fundamentals are the fundamentals.
Yeah.
So you cannot just, you know, there is no shortcut.
No.
If you want to be successful, it's not going to be easy. Don't expect AI comes in and give you a magic button and you press and in the morning, 8 a.m., everything changes in your...
I don't think it's ever going to happen. I mean, because as advanced as these tools are getting, you're kind of polluting your own pond a little bit. So, but people are doing things now. They're showing up at people's offices. They're really hyper-personalizing. Here's what I do like about it. The people who are going to, like a slow cooker, people who are going to cook their dinner in a slow cooker, they're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're smart and using these advanced tools, or I'm really excited about what the tools will look like in 2 or 3 years, the people who are really patient but are also very disciplined in doing it the right way, I think the AI is going to win. But I haven't seen the patience yet in the because there's so much pressure on these companies to produce, you know, pipeline and revenue. So like it's easier for them to send out 10,000 emails over 3 months than it is to like, okay, we're going to identify the list. You know, you have to slow jam these prospects. I think if you don't use AI the right way, you have to be very patient and very disciplined and have a longer window. And it might mean instead of having 10 SDRs, I only have 5. Or instead of 5, I only have 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I go hire a RevOps person. You know, I don't know yet. We'll see. So maybe that's the way. But that's the way I wish people had always done it. But it's hard to do that because there's a lot of pressure to produce. You know that better than I do.
Yeah. So from that aspect, you being the... you know, outsourced SDR firm working with a lot of these SaaS companies and software companies, you should have developed some kind of very special insight mm-hmm. on your side when you looked at this company that you are choosing to work with either in short term or long term. You were hoping at least when you started working with them that is a very long term relationship and partnership. Yeah. How could you kind of, you know, what kind of insight did you develop at the time that you are talking to the founder, you are talking to someone, the VP of sales, CRO, whoever, on the other side, and then you ask some questions to understand that SaaS company and their business and the way it works and their DNA and their processes, and then you form an opinion and you say, you know what, and since you have done it so many times, my guess is the algorithm running in your mind is super efficient and it's like works like a magic that you can really talk to a software company in 10, 15 minutes and develop some kind of insight that nobody else probably would be able to do that. That's a very unique experience that you had.
Yeah.
Can you share some of those maybe with us?
Yeah. Well, that's very generous. I mean, I hope to think I could come up with something that they don't have, but there are probably lots of, actually, I know lots of people who I would refer to our prospects who could really boil it down. I'm a tactician, right? We're laser focused. And sometimes people would say, you guys should do these other things at Memory Blue. And we do other things. We definitely do other things, but the focus on this outbound piece requires a lot of focus. Mm. I would say, with the technology companies, this is my opinion, the star of the technology company is almost always the product, is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. That's a true star. The number two is usually the pipeline or deals that are about ready to close. And then maybe this is, you know, this isn't from an outsider standpoint. And you're the CEO, founder of multiple software companies, so you could argue with me. But this is how I view it. This is what I think I see. and maybe the third is like the next version of the product. Marketing might be in there, but marketing typically is better than it ever was. But the true go-to-market motion, marketing tended to kind of focus more on the things that are a little more sexy and harder to track. And I think the best marketers are the ones that will say, hey, put my name up there with the VP of sales on the revenue attainment and like pay me a bonus on that. And if we don't hit the revenue number as a team, and maybe you don't, as a CEO, you don't care where it comes from. I think what I have seen is where the CEO has a really strong grasp on go to market and the pipeline, and he's got marketing and sales working real close together, and the marketers are much more closely aligned to revenue than they are brand and what I would call the softer things, which I think are more fun.
Yep.
And I can tell usually within like 10 or 15 minutes of a meeting if, like, based upon all, you know, worked with over 2,800 clients, not me personally, but the company.
Sure.
I can tell when you've got those three people all kind of on the same page, and there are sorts of disagreements. I met with a company last week with the head of marketing. It's a cyber company. The marketing leader has been part of three exits with the technical founders. Mm-hmm. And the head of marketing was upset because they're doing POCs and they're getting their asses kicked because the product's not ready for prime time yet. They're building the product as they're doing the POCs, and the head of marketing wants them to go down market to mid-market and say, hey, the environments aren't as complex. And I could see this conversation going on and no one was taking it personal and people were being very clear. And when you have that sort of relationship at the top, you know, whether you hire me or do it yourself in-house, you're going to find success, right? Whether you hire a competitor of mine, but I think it's kind of rare you have that. And that's the burden, the responsibility of a CEO. But in 15 minutes to me, I'm like, oh, I want to work with these guys. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys are going to like figure it out, versus a lot of times, you know, maybe the VP of sales is a mercenary, or maybe the marketing person is an ad hoc marketing person and they have like four clients.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time. So where are you in their priority of things if they have four, you know, so.
No, this is fantastic kind of, you know, analysis and insight, because essentially, if I wanted to summarize what you said, you say, if you are a software company and product company, make sure you have a great product, because that's what you are selling.
Yeah.
The bad product makes you fail. The great product, it still doesn't make you successful. That's not enough by itself. But make sure first that you have a great product. Number two, then you are at the point that you need to have happy customers. That's great asset. Now, if you have a great product and you have happy customers, the third comes with that harmony that you have to create, and the true, very truthful conversation, communication, very constructive communication, harmony between your revenue team leaders, because they are over there trying to sell, trying to serve customers. And if the sales, revenue, marketing, CX, whatever you name it, depending on the company, so whoever is customer facing, if they are not really working with each other in a very constructive way, that will be translated to, you know, the price that customers and product and everybody else has to pay. And your efforts is going not to be as effective and as efficient that you may think. So you're absolutely right. As a CEO leader of a SaaS company, you know, that person needs to be, you know, the orchestra leader, essentially kind of, you know, the whole orchestra in front of him or her. And that person needs to make sure that everybody is playing in harmony, in a very harmonious way. And then everything plays very nicely and it sounds nice and it works very well. So, no, that's great. That's a great insight. And that's what you wanted to get in that meeting. When you go there, you ask a question to make sure the product is real, they have some good customers, and also the team is the team that they can solve the problems, rather than just be, you know, maybe yes man, or maybe not really be real, sitting there and making good decisions. So,
yeah, that's the cultural piece, right? How it's okay to have some conflict between your head of revenue and your head of marketing. I think I would actually encourage it. Mm-hmm. I would just try to get the marketing person a little bit more on the side of the revenue.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. I'm going to ask you a fun question. Totally irrelevant.
These are all fun questions.
This is a kind of, I like traveling, and I travel, and I have seen you traveling sometimes. I met you even last time in the conference in the Bay Area, if you remember.
Yeah.
Kathy and I were there,
That
and
was a long time ago, though.
we ran into each other in that conference. So, amongst all of the cities that you have traveled so far,
Oh, wow.
which city would you like to go, and when would be that 2 week time period that you would choose to go there?
You mean like for fun, for leisure?
Absolutely. For
In the
fun.
US or overseas?
Anywhere you like. No, in the world. Anywhere.
Man. Oh,
You can choose any 2 weeks, any time of the year, and say, at this time of the year, for 2 weeks, I will choose this city to go there because I loved it so much last time we were there.
purely personal? I mean, I used to live in Germany. I mean, I like Germany, but I like I, well, the US is my favorite country in the world, period, right? However, I lived in Germany growing up, and I'm a big fan of soccer or, European football. And in 1990, I attended the World Cup. I was maybe 16 years old, and I lived in Italy. Well, I lived in Germany, but my friends and I, we were like 15 years old, and we had one who lived in Italy. We took the train all over Italy, and we went to like four or five games. I would like to be in either in South America or Europe during the World Cup, and just taking the public transportation, not driving trains, to the cities to watch the host nations play.
Oh,
Because
fantastic.
I think that's a, soccer is a global sport. You have every culture, almost every country. So I like experiencing that, where to me it blows my mind that, it's all the same people. They're all watching the same sport, the same rules, and there'll be people, the good fans get along with each other, even though they want desperately their team to lose. So that's not answer your question, but the next World Cup is in the US, so I'm going to go to that one, but in Mexico. So maybe it would be amazing to go see Mexico play in Mexico.
That's great. No, I can definitely resonate with what you said because my cousin's husband, he's so dedicated to soccer. He's a very successful architect, and he has, he's taking some of these very serious, kind of very good size kind of projects. But during the soccer time, he just tells everyone at the very start of the project that when a soccer team is playing, that is my favorite team, I have to go and everything will be kind of, I'm not going to show up at work. I have to go there and just watch the game. And there is another person that I know in Washington, D.C., actually, and he was raised in the U.K. And his favorite teams are the British, teams. And he's so dedicated to just watching these soccer games. And so I can see that kind of, how it might be interesting to those people, and if you have seen that in action when at that age, it's has a very good impression on you, and you wanted to just see that sec that those moments come back, and the energized kind of moments that you remember. So
It's fun. It's a great sport. So
okay,
it's good culturally. It crosses all the lines, all the cultural lines.
that's great. And my last question to you is about a book that you can recommend either personally or professionally that has been impactful to what you do.
You all right, so I'm at Blue Tusk now.
Sure.
So Chris Corcoran and I are still working with Memory Blue, and very much want it to be as successful as it can possibly be. But he and I have also started an incubator called Blue Tusk Partners, where he and I are looking for one to four operators that we want to invest in, and grow a business. And it doesn't need to be a software business. It could be a boring business. It could be a professional services business adjacent to Memory Blue. We will see. We're in the early stages of this. And part of the desire of building this incubator is we have been flummoxed that we've worked with so many amazing people over the years at Memory Blue primarily, but also they've gone off. We have over like 1,400 alums who exited Memory Blue in spectacular fashion. And also clients, and then people in our ecosystem. And we always wonder, like, why don't more people start their own business? Right? I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And it's not for everyone. Not everyone needs to do it. You know that. You've started more businesses than I have successfully. But right now I'm a one-hit wonder, so we'll see if I can have a second good album. And when you start thinking about that, and tech's an amazing industry, you can make a you can have a very good lifestyle, and it can be very fulfilling and rewarding too, and there's downsides to it as well. But so what we want to do is, when we started Memory Blue, you know, Chris, we didn't take any funding ever along the way from anyone, or we had a line of credit with the bank, but we just self-funded it. So we drained our 401ks, drained all of our savings. My friends couldn't believe how little money I had in my account when I was like 30 years old. They're like, that's all the money you have? Yes, I got $31 until, you know, we decided to pay ourselves again. And that's a barrier to people to start businesses. And it's also like a mindset thing. So what we're doing is, we're trying to provide people some income replacement, some real equity in a business, you know, not that stock options are bad, but like, you know, real ownership in a business, and the support that we've garnered from like the highs and lows of building a company from scratch over 2 years, and then access to capital. We're blessed enough that we can provide some of our own money. And if we need to go get some money or raise some money, we can help with that, because we have some experience doing that. So I have four kids, and my kids live in this little entrepreneurial world. And, you know, my parents were in the military. My dad was an army officer, and my mom was a government bureaucrat. Amazing people, right? But we were sitting around talking about businesses in our house. So we're trying to use Memory Blue Tusk, excuse me, as a platform for people who want to start a business. So I'm having my kids. It's funny, you know, this is a podcast. Everyone in my house is rereading the house. My son and I are rereading this book. This book is very controversial in some ways, right? I mean,
do you play the cash flow board game as well?
No, I know he hasn't played it. I haven't played it, but the most interesting aspect of the book is the prose and the title. Like, my son got upset at the title because the title is kind of jarring and it's judgmental. Yeah. He didn't want to read it. He's reading it finally after a lot of cajoling. But it certainly presents a point of view, a perspective. Particularly, it resonates more now because the book came out like in 97, I think.
Yeah.
98. I believe with the cost of higher education, what we were talking about earlier, it's, why not start your own business? It just kind of has a different perspective, which I think more people should consider. If you can kind of block out the kind of like, I think this guy's had some financial problems of his own, if you Google him. But the core tenet is very, it resonates. And it's part of the reason why, you know, it's partially inspired me to start Memory Blue. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. It's like, it's a classic. So, and I happen to be reading it now, but
yeah,
I mean, it aligns with Memory Blue. Like, geez, with Blue Tusk, we want people who want to make the leap. Let's make the leap.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely. And some of the concepts, I think that more like, you know, understanding how the passive income generation works versus, you know, how to build even equity, how in different style, but all of that goes back to the bucket of that kind of creating the passive income. So, and I think it was marvelous the way he also, if I'm correct, he's the creator of that board game that is Cashflow.
Yes.
And then, you know, based on the same book, and it was created for really the training purposes. And then it became available as a board game if someone wants to. And they simplified it and changed it a little bit. And now it's available as a board game. And I think that actually is very important. Unfortunately, I didn't see that game, and nobody told me about that kind of topic during high school age.
Me too.
Which I believe that should be really part of the high school training, and it's more important than understanding chemistry or some other things that in life it may work or may not work. This is something that everybody's life is going to benefit from it. If you know these concepts, then you will look differently financially at the kind of, you know, life you're building for yourself and for others, and it will help you to help others as well. So no, that's definitely, you know, a book that, you know, at least people may like it or not, but definitely I would say everybody should read it regardless, because you will get something out of it. Everybody may get something out of it that, you know, will make you smarter from financial perspective. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, our economy is largely driven off consumer spending, right? Discretionary spending. And, you know, that's not always bad, but it's a different perspective. It's non-traditional. And there's a lot of credence, I think, to it in terms of, you're right, not, you don't have to start a business from reading the book, but you might look at how you invest money differently. Who knows? Hopefully. So That's my recommendation.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you very much, Mark. I'm so happy I had this chance to speak with you and reconnect. And as always, we had such a great discussion, and we will keep in touch. Definitely,
absolutely.
I will ping
Yeah,
you back,
24
and
years.
who knows, maybe next year I ping you again and say we wanted to get some updates about really your new firm now and what is the Bluetooth partners doing at the moment, and get some updates and go
All
from
right.
there. So yeah,
Good.
super.
Hopefully we have some good updates. We'll see. I don't want
it
to be.
Will be. No, it will be definitely.
All right.
Knowing you, it will be, sure.
All right.
Okay,
that.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.